Man, it's been a crazy few months for me to realize, yo, there's a new human in my family that I am responsible for, whose life I will have a huge hand in shaping by how I live myself and the lessons that I choose to teach her. And that's very sobering. And it also makes me realize that what I'm doing now in terms of my career and my business and my artistry is even more significant, because she is going to grow up and be like, what did my dad do? Again, it all comes back to story. She's going to have her own story. And me and my wife are going to be a huge part of that story. Whenever someone interviews me now and says, tell me about how you got into music, my parents is the first part of my story.
Talo falava ma lole soe fua and dewo. And welcome to another amazing Le Talanoa Therapy podcast with your girl Shirley. This episode was proudly brought to you by Mea Lamu Security, Confident Clothing, QS Consultancies, and Mangere 275. Hey guys, I just want to say thank you so much to everyone that's been tuning in and sharing our link, and also like just sending through all that positive energy, you know, during the week. Now, I'm really excited to introduce our next guest, but before that, I just want to encourage you guys to share a link about our show, about any episode that you've enjoyed, or please download the Apple Podcast app and scroll down to where it says leave a review, and please leave your feedback on there. We would really appreciate it if you can share your feedback, because every feedback helps us improve. We are actually heading into our 7th month since we started. So I'm really, really excited. I'm actually quite humbled that, you know, we're still here and we're still able to do this. You know, one thing I really enjoy about having this podcast is that this isn't about just me sharing my journey and my stories. This is about giving everyone a platform to share their stories. And this is a really great time for us to share our stories on all these different platforms, because, you know, back in the day, we never even had this. But I also want to encourage you guys to, like, give us a follow. If you haven't followed our page, we do have an Instagram page, which is called Le Talanoa Therapy Podcast Show. Get on there, follow our page, share it with 3 of your favorite people, and also have a discussion about it. And if anyone out there would like me to promote their business or would like to sponsor our show, you can also email me at queenshirleymusic@gmail.com. And yeah, let's make it happen. But right about now, I want to get straight into our incredible Talanoa with the rap scientist, the one and only Masbo Q.
Hey.
Hey, what's up? Masbo Q, how's it going?
It's good, good, good,
good. Wow. Welcome to the Le Talanoa Therapy Podcast Show, man.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
One thing, you know, that I absolutely love about your style of music, not just how musically inclined you are, but you're so talented, bro. And I just want to say, I love how you incorporate your culture, issues around social justice, but you're also very unique. You know, your rap style is so diverse and you know how to rock a stage, bro. Like I said before, I remember when you were headlining for that gig in Solo Park, and you had every single person on their feet, like the moms, the dads, the children. Even I got into it, and I don't really do that sort of stuff, bro. Yeah. And I just want to say it was just a breath of fresh air to see, you know, especially as an MC, is like so different. Seeing you on stage, you were so comfortable. And then I love how you switch from being an MC to playing instruments, you know, during Kevin Posey's set, as well as Simba. You guys all worked really well together, and it was beautiful.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
And so I just wanted to say it was very refreshing to see you in your element. And yeah, at the end of the night, I became a huge fan, bro.
Now that's so awesome to hear. Thank you.
But yeah, I wanted you to take us through that creative process of like what you do before preparing for a show, and how did you put that whole thing together?
Yeah, so I guess I should contextualize the whole thing by saying that I came from the rock and metal sphere. So when I was growing up through high school, I actually played in rock bands and metal bands and punk bands. And that sort of formed the context or the bedrock for my my live show as is, because I came into hip hop as someone who didn't ever want to be just a performer with a DJ. Nothing wrong with that, but that just wasn't my thing. I came from an environment where there were multiple instruments on stage. It was loud. It was intense. The crowd was going a little wild. There's engagement between the frontman and the crowd. You know, everything's just crazy. And so that's the environment I came from. That's what I wanted to take with me as I entered into hip hop. So when I started writing my own music and preparing for live shows, I had to have a think about how I can capture some of that energy from my old musical life and bring it to my new one. And what I figured out, well, there were two main things. Firstly, the people you perform with are really important. So a couple of the people in my band are actually from my middle days. My drummer, I knew him from the middle scene, and my guitarist was in my middle band. So they understand where I'm going with things. And the next thing is that there's actually quite a lot of intersection between hip hop and metal, a lot more than people realize when it comes to the different grooves and the different rhythms that sort of present themselves and show themselves. So there's an opportunity when you perform live to capitalize on these similarities and bring some of that metal energy to hip hop by the way you play drums, the way you arrange certain instruments to be playing certain things at certain times, and obviously the live presence that you sort of bring. So every time I'm about to play a show, I make sure that all my backing tracks are set up. I'll remove certain tracks in the instrumental that I know are going to be live. And so I know that the live version of those things are going to bring a little bit more energy and a little bit more presence there. I'll arrange that based on what band I have on the day. And then I guess when it comes to performing, I just make sure everything is elevated. Because I think what's important to me is to provide a different experience from what you're listening to on Spotify or, you know, in the studio or anything like that. It needs to be different, because if it's not, then why come to a live show? You might as well just chill at home, listen to me through the headphones. You know, if you're coming to see me live, it needs to be different. Either you're going to be moving, I'm going to be moving, something's going to be moving, something's going to sound different, something's going to, you know, like, there has to be something that gives people a reason to be like, oh, you know, I've heard this guy in studio, but his live show, that's different. You know what I'm saying? So that's the mentality I always approach my live shows with. And that's probably why you end up sort of enjoying it in that way.
Beautiful, bro. I love it. I also wanted to talk about how you engage with the crowd. What made you think that the people were going to do that? Like that dance that you did, like you had people like learning this dance. What do you call that?
It's like a line dance or a square dance thing. But I tell you what, it's less about what the actual thing is. Yeah, I mean, those were very simple steps. You know what I'm saying? They weren't even that cool. But I think the thing is, when you're performing, you need to, and this is what I tell a lot of the young people that I mentor, you need to graft people into the story that you're telling. You know, you're telling a story of what the content in your music, and you're giving the audience an experience. And an experience is always going to be more memorable if you're part of it. The same with any kind of sort of media or any kind of entertainment, movies, TV shows, songs, anything that makes you feel like you're a part of what's going on is going to make you remember that and make you more willing to engage in that. So every time I play live, I just look for moments and opportunities to make the crowd part of my performance, whether that's doing a simple step to the right, step to the left, or whatever, or getting them to sing a part, getting them to do this. It's all important, because they go away feeling like they were part of the performance too. And all you got to do really is just be really confident with it. Like, don't get me wrong, some crowds are a lot more difficult than other crowds. Some crowds, especially the younger ones, are super willing to get into it, though. They're super enthusiastic. Sometimes it's a little bit slower, but at the end of the day, if they're there to see you play, you're in control. I'll literally get up and be like, I'm not going to start playing a single song until at least five people are standing up. You know what I'm saying? And people be like, oh, you know, but I just stand there. I'll be like, I'm getting paid for this. You know, I can stand here for an hour. I'm still getting paid. Y'all the ones that are missing out on the experience. You might as well stand up and enjoy this with me. And then Well, you know, when you have that kind of confidence and that kind of attitude, they kind of start being like, all right, let's see what's happening here. And they stand up and then they realize, okay, actually, it's a lot more fun when I'm involved in this kind of thing. And people see that, people feed off each other's energy. And then, you know, a couple of songs and everyone's involved. And then everyone's just having a bit of time than they would have had if they were just sitting there watching, you know? So, yeah, you just gotta go for it.
No, bro, I love that. You know, it just reminded me of when Big Daddy Kane came here one year.
Yeah.
He said something real similar. Mm-hmm. He said, you know, if you guys don't get involved, don't engage, then this ain't hip hop. He definitely delivered that day. I mean, that was one of the shows that I seen, but I thought that was so powerful because I have never seen you live. And I thought you were amazing. And so I also wanted to talk about your upbringing too. Like, you know, obviously a lot of us know you came from UK as a baby and you grew up in South Auckland, bro. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Your journey as a Nigerian growing up in South Auckland, did you ever experience any of that kind of feeling or felt out of place or like racism?
Oh, yeah, 100%. That kind of defined my upbringing. And I've said this in a couple of interviews, like my family were among the first of the Nigerian immigrants to Aotearoa. And in Manurewa, where I grew up, like there wasn't anyone else. You know what I'm saying? Like when I went to primary school, a lot of people hadn't even seen Black people before, except for on TV. So they didn't really know how to respond to me, how to position me in their minds, how to categorize me. I mean, they're kids. No one really does. And kids are mean. Kids have things to say if you're a little bit different from them. So they didn't hesitate to let me know that I was different. So growing up, I had to reckon with the fact that I was different to everyone else. But I had no concept of that because I came here when I was a baby. So Aotearoa was all I knew. You know, it would be a slightly different story if I had grown up overseas and I had that sense of home and that sense of familiarity. And then I came here and I had to adjust. But I grew up here. So for me, I only knew being a citizen of Aotearoa. So it was very confronting to grow up in school and be like, oh no, actually you're different, man. You're not like us. Because then I'm like, all right, who am I then? Because I can't really go back to Nigeria and say, these are my people. Because at number one, I look different. I talk different. I have a different culture to them. The people that have a familiar look to me on TV, the Black Americans, I can't really identify with them as much as I'd like to. This is with me when I was young because I don't speak like them. I didn't have the upbringing that they had. You know what I'm saying? So I had this weird experience of, okay, where do I sit and who am I? So like when it was very strange growing up in high school, and sort of going through phases of wanting to be white, not being accepted as that, wanting to be Māori or Pacifica, not being accepted as that, wanting to be a Black American, not being, you know, accepted to be that. There was no role model for me to look at and be like, you know, this is who I'm trying to aspire to be. There was no representation for me because the idea of a Black New Zealander was so new, so novel. Like my generation was essentially the first generation of that. So it was only really when I got into adulthood that I came to terms with the fact that I'm actually defining this road that I'm walking on. You know, I'm not walking in the footsteps of anyone in this regard. I'm defining my own road and I get to decide what that looks like. I get to say, yeah, you know what? I am Nigerian and I have this Igbo heritage, but I have this Aotearoa upbringing. And I have this sort of, you know, I was born in UK. I've got all these three things and I get to decide how they mix together and how they form my identity. But as I said, it was only well into adulthood where that became something that I could comfortably sit in. Whilst it was growing up, it was very painful because, as you know, when you're growing up, you want to fit in. You want to be a part of what's going on. You don't want to look different. You don't want to stand out because standing out means people say nasty things, treat you differently. And, you know, you feel alone. So, yeah, that was, I guess, the journey you could say was one of coming to love and accept myself, which I guess everyone resonates with in some sort of way. But in my case, it was in the context of cultural identity.
Yeah, I get you, bro. I totally hear you. I wanted to touch a little bit about your name change as well. So you moved from, because I remember then when we did the gig, you were under Unchained
XL. But at the turn of 2020, so at the end of 2019, I had a bunch of new material prepped, a new EP. And when I reflected on the EP, content-wise, it represented an evolution for me. And also sound-wise, it was an evolution for me. It wasn't my typical sort of Afro-funk influence hip-hop that had defined my rap career thus far. And then also that was the time when, you know, my wife was heavily pregnant and I was about to enter a new era of life being a parent. So there were quite a few things changing for me. And I had to, it was a pivotal moment because I had to decide, am I going to continue trying to do what I'm doing or am I going to step into this evolution? And I decided to step in there and I was like, I think I should probably change my name. I've wanted to change my name for a long time. This is what I was thinking at that point. But there was never, A, I could never think of something. B, it didn't really feel like a good time. And to be fair, it wasn't a good time because I was just about to release some new music. I had mentors. I had PR people telling me it's probably not a good idea because it's going to be like you're starting again. I had advisors saying, I don't know about this. My friends be like, oh, man, Unchained XL is a cool name. Why are you changing it? You know, a lot of people were like, I'm not sure about this. But I had to be sure of myself because, like, there would never be a good time. The longer I continued with Unchained XL, just the harder it would be. And if I dropped this new project under Unchained XL, how much harder would it be if I decided to change my name later after that? So I was like, it's going to be now or never. And because all these things were changing, it made sense to me. And they were changing in a way that came back to me. Again, it came back to this whole thing of identity and who was I. Very ironically, what I was under Unchained XL was very restricting. Because I'd built up this sort of Afro-funk hip-hop sound, which I love, and to be honest, I still produce a bit of that. But I had produced so much of that and constrained my sound to that, that I felt like if I was to make something else, it would be off-brand. And a similar situation occurred with the content of my music. I had, up until that point, been very politically outspoken. Everything I talked about was social commentary in the context of race, identity, politics, very heavy subjects. And whilst, again, I still deal with that stuff in my current music, I didn't want it to be everything because, like, no human is just pure politics. We all have emotions and feelings and inclinations outside of that. We think about love. We think about friendships. We think about depression. We think, you know, and there's no point in being a creative if you can't use your creativity to express all of you. So I had to be like, okay, if this need and this desire to express all of me is being restricted by my name and by the brand I'd built up, I needed to change. You know what I'm saying? Regardless of how much friction or how difficult it would be, I needed to change it. So I decided to change my name to something that represented me more personally, something that sounded more like a name, and that's something that would allow me mentally to be more free, more unchained, ironically, to pursue these different emotions that I have and create according to them. And that name was Masbo Q. Masbo is an anagram of my birth last name, and Q is like a phonetic approximation of my first name. So Masbo Q is essentially my name. It's cooler for me because it just feels more like a name. Like, a lot of people just call me Maz now. They only know me as Maz, which is cool. And the second part of that is that, yeah, it feels like the artist identity is me rather than this thing that I'm trying to be.
Because I feel like a lot of people, well, not a lot of people, but I know that there are definitely artists out there that I have met along the journey in hip-hop that have actually been through the same thing as you, bro. I know some actually signed to a label where it messed up their whole career.
I was never signed, and that wasn't always by choice. Like, at the time, I was very much open to the idea. But I think at some level, I knew that it probably never would have been a good fit for me to be signed with, especially majors, just because I don't like the idea of my sound or my direction or my brand being too swayed, you know what I'm saying, or too defined for me. One thing that I've always been aware of when sort of talking to my peers who are signed to major labels is the autonomy that is taken from them in terms of when they want to release music, when they want to do it, what their branding is like, and a lot of things that feel so natural for me to control. To relinquish that is in a way that major labels will demand you to, was something that I didn't want to do. So I think, yeah, it was better that, like, no, it wasn't a successful venture for me to try and get signed to a major. So I just sort of ended up staying with the whole independent thing. And then I sort of, the more I learned about the industry and how major labels operated, the more I was like, you know what? Maybe I'm going to stay independent.
Good call. It's such a tough one, eh, bro?
Yeah. I mean, from what I know, labels obviously have the reach and influence in places that matter. And they can take you places faster. They can open doors for you that you might not otherwise be able to open. And also they have money. And that, whether we like it or not, that is a huge thing. Marketing, branding is a central part of any kind of business, not just music, but especially music. And labels usually, or sometimes, they get the marketing thing very well and they have massive budgets to throw in that direction. So yes, they can get you places, but there's always a trade-off. Number one, the autonomy. You become their product, essentially. And that's what they're doing. I guess the sooner you realize that, the better as a young artist. Like, you become a product. They're not doing charity work. You are there to make them money. So they're going to have a say in where their product is placed, how their product looks, how their product is ideally going to be received. And, you know, to a certain extent, you're just going to have to go along with that. That's the first trade-off. The second trade-off is that any money they invest in you is money you're going to have to pay back. You know what I'm saying? So yes, they're helping by investing in you. They're helping you get further. So your music will make more money, but a lot of the time that does not happen. And you can get in situations where they've invested a lot of money in you and their investments haven't returned. So you might be stuck in a deal where you're having to produce more and more music just to pay this initial investment back. After which they sort of chuck you aside, toss you aside, you know, and then your career hasn't really gone anywhere. You spent a lot of money. Where are you? You know what I'm saying? And a lot of the time, all the music that you put out is under that label. You don't have ownership of it anyway. So you can't even make money, you know? So I think it's something where you have to do a lot of research, talk to a lot of people who've been in it. That's a big thing, because it's easy to look at your favorite artists on YouTube, watch interviews, watch their videos, and see them just really living it up, having a great life, touring the world, and thinking that that is what the label life is. The reality is that that's a small percentage of artists that get to that. And sometimes even them, they can crash and burn. Yeah. But for many, you know, for many, it doesn't really go anywhere. And you can end up in places that are quite, you know, quite tricky and quite constricting. And yeah, that can take a few years away from your career. So yeah, it's a trade-off.
Man, thank you so much for breaking that down. I feel like, you know, it's crazy. Like I said before, you know, I had friends who went through it, but just to kind of hear from your perspective, you know, it's sort of validates it, because, you know, we all kind of been through it sort of thing, but it's almost like we still got to keep raising awareness about it. And I feel like, you know, also it comes with age as well. Like, you're at a place where I feel your words are trustworthy enough for someone to listen to. And so to me, it's like how you said something on your post, how your recording studio, how you said you don't want just anybody coming in and recording them. It's like you want quality. You want to produce quality stuff.
Yes, obviously the quality is a big thing, but I think it's also meaningful art. That's something I'm massive on. Art that inspires change, art that inspires growth, and art that inspires reflection. So the reason why I don't just record anyone and I kind of screen the people sort of that come through to my studio is because if I'm going to have my hand in it, I want it to align with what I'm about. If you like go through and listen to my music or just have a look at some of the stuff that's in my discography, you'll realize that there are gigantic stories behind some of these songs. So one of the lead tracks of my last album, Don't Stop Regardless, I created a mini documentary out of that. And the mini documentary captures a larger story. And I guess the mini documentary is designed to be a snapshot of an even larger story that I sort of talk about. I've talked about it in interviews. I've written it down in quite a few places, but it's to make a long story short, it's this idea of this time traveler coming from a future where Africa is free and liberated, coming to our timeline and encouraging children of Africa, Africa's diaspora around the world to continue fighting for justice and so on and so forth. And so there's this big narrative that I created. And the song captures a chunk of that. The documentary captures a chunk of that. And the reason why I write music like that is because I want to give people something to explore and something to dive into and something to sort of look at and read about and ingest so that they can be inspired to do something more. So one of the cool things that came out of that documentary is one of the guys who featured on there, an Afro-Brazilian guy. Previously, he wasn't really ever motivated to look into his Afro heritage. He knew he had it, and he was curious about it. But it wasn't until we approached him for this documentary saying, hey, we're looking for people of African descent because we want to talk about so on and so forth. And the story that I presented him with encouraged him to deep dive into his own history. And then when it came to interviewing him and afterwards, you could see the change that happened in his own life. And he told me straight up, he's like, bro, I've been looking into my African heritage. I'm embracing it now. I've been looking into my family tree. And all it comes, and his life's changed. He's different. His identity has evolved from the story that I've grafted him into. And that's the kind of art that I'm passionate about. Like, if you're putting out art there, like, and this is not to say that you can't do the old party song or the one that just gets people vibing along. Like, of course, that's great. It's good to enjoy life. But we have this amazing gift of music that we can embed stories into with the potential to really change lives. So why wouldn't you be doing that? Mm-hmm. That's what I want to do. You know what I'm saying? Like, so a lot of my work has a depth of story behind it that if you invest yourself in, yeah, there's a potential for change. And that's the kind of art I want to surround myself with. And those are the kind of artists I want to, you know, be involved with.
You have such an incredible mind, bro. Like, honestly, I could listen to you all day talking about it because I feel you. That's one of the reasons why I started this podcast, because I felt like lockdown was kind of dumbing me down. Well, you know, not being able to engage with people. To me, I grow every time I talk to someone. I'm always learning something and I'm a learner of life. And I feel like your voice needs to be heard more. But speaking of GOAT, I want to talk about the song that you did with Razor Beezer, man. Love that track, the GOAT track. It kind of gave me that Batman and Robin vibes, you know?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's cool. It's got that, you know, that vintage jazz feel.
Yeah, so I guess this song is tied conceptually to another song. So I did a song late 2020 called Bruce Souls, and that was with an artist in New York called Reggie Angelo. She's around the same age as me. You know, we're in our 30s now, sort of doing music. And for rappers in their 30s, there's the sense of, oh, you know, you might have missed the boat a little bit. You know, if you haven't made it by now, then you're probably over the hill. Yeah. You probably should focus on other things. So that song, Bruce Souls, was about being a bit older in the game, but still giving it your all and being like, you know what, just because we're a bit older doesn't mean that we can't really do this. In fact, we have some extra wisdom and some extra experience that we can use to inform our art and make it great in that sense. So this song with Razor Beezer sort of continues that, but it I guess it puts a lighter spin on it, you know, with this whole with the goat and the music video with actual goats and stuff. But I guess, yeah, again, Razor is around my age. You know, we're in our 30s. I guess the reason why we chose that kind of jazzy vintage kind of loop over this drill is to, like, at the time, you know, drill was really, I mean, drill's still popping, but at that time when we released it, drill was massive. Mm-hmm. But it was like seen as this modern sort of young people's thing. But I'm like, if we put this old vintage jazz on top of this drill, the symbolism is that, yo, we're a bit older here. but we can still do this. You know what I'm saying? You know, the only reason you have this is because it evolved out of the music that we were brought up on. Mm. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, the contrast between the old school jazz and the drill sort of represents these two older people sort of doing this thing. And then I guess, yeah, the themes that come through in the music, yeah, you know, we might not be the freshest in the game anymore, but we put in the work. We put in the work. And if you want to jump on this hype train, you better jump on now, because tomorrow it could all change for us. Could all change for us in 10 years. And if you're only jumping on when it has changed, we're not going to have time with you. We're going to be busy dealing with goat problems, which is the title of the track. You know what I'm saying? We're going to be too busy dealing with these $100,000 million deals, with problems with staff, problems with business, problems with all these things that you encounter when you've really made it. We're going to be too busy dealing with that to deal with people who only want to come to us once we've made it. You know what I'm saying? So that's kind of the vibe of the song. But the undercurrent of it is like, yo, we've been doing this for a while. You know what I'm saying? We're not new. Yeah, but we're still here.
That's so clever, man. I love it. Yeah. And I love that you were able to infuse those two elements of different styles of music together. It's beautiful, bro.
Yeah. Absolutely. Thank you.
So I wanted to tell Anoa about you being a parent. I always got to talk about being a parent, man, because I'm always like learning off parents. I have an autistic child. It's so hard, so challenging. And, you know, like you said, just something like similar to what you just mentioned, you know, being in my 40s now, I feel like I feel that sometimes I feel like, am I still supposed to do this?
Yeah.
I mean, that's part of our life. It's part of our lifestyle. And I feel like it's crazy. But, you know, when you become a parent, it changes everything. And your energy changes, your songwriting, your lyrics change, and everything's
Oh, yeah.
What are some of the challenges and how were you able to overcome some of them?
Man, it's been a crazy few months for me to realize, yo, there's a new human in my family that I am responsible for, whose life I will have a huge hand in shaping by how I live myself and the lessons that I choose to teach her. And still, even now, even 2 years deep, I'm still like, man, wild. Especially at now she learns to, you know, talk, be more autonomous. It's every day I'm like, wow, this is a human. Like, you know, for a while, obviously, you know, when the wife is pregnant, you're like, just baby, child, small, helpless little thing. Even when they're born for the first while, baby, because all they're doing is feeding, crying, and sleeping. You know what I'm saying? So you're in this baby mentality. It's not until you start seeing them develop their own personality, develop their own desires, communicate those desires, that you realize, oh, it's not baby anymore. It's human being. And that once upon a time, you were this. And the things that she's experiencing now and the things that she's learning now from me and my wife are going to be carried with her into adulthood in some way. And that's very sobering. And it also makes me realize that what I'm doing now in terms of my career and my business and my artistry is even more significant, because she is going to grow up and be like, what did my dad do? What kind of thing should I say about him? What legacy did he leave for me? The life that I'm providing for her is going to be something that she defines her upbringing. You know, when she does whatever she does, be it being an artist or a sports person or an academic or whatever she chooses to do, she's going to have her own story. Again, it all comes back to story. She's going to have her own story. And me and my wife are going to be a huge part of that story. Whenever someone interviews me now and says, tell me about how you got into music, my parents is the first part of my story. My parents bringing me into piano at 4 years old is the reason my life has taken the trajectory it's taken right now. At 4 years old, my daughter's 2.5, right? So I'm like, damn, you know, what am I doing now that's going to set her up for the rest of her life? How am I setting her up? So that means everything that I write, every decision I make in terms of my business, I'm now thinking, you know, how am I going to leave something precious and something beautiful for her to tell when she gets older? So in that sense, it's a lot of pressure, but it also injects a lot more meaning into what you're doing. As you say, your lyrics start to change, right? The songs that I started to write when my wife was in late stage pregnancy, And then when my baby girl was actually born, I wasn't actually consciously doing this, but a lot of my lyrics turned into legacy type stuff. It turned into sort of self-directing encouragement, like, yo, you need to keep going. You need to keep doing this. You need to keep building your future. If you feel like giving up, don't give up. You know, how's your daughter gonna feel about it? This stuff just started coming out in my lyrics because I was feeling it at such a deep level, to the point where my entire last album is literally based on this idea of time and the idea of me in my future, my past, and my present, and how my daughter sort of fits into that. So I'm like, yeah, it changes a lot. And it doesn't change it in the sense that you now make decisions. These things that I talk about, like me switching in my thinking or me switching in my behavior, this just happens. You know, this happens at a natural, at a base level. Your priorities just change. One thing that's quite funny was before my wife got pregnant, I always thought, oh man, you know, when I have kids, I won't be able to hang out with the boys anymore. I won't be able to do what I want, yeah, and all that kind of stuff, you know. And then I become a parent and I'm like, I don't even care about it, man. Like the last time I actually went to a gig, can't even really think of, but I'm not like, oh damn, I'm missing out on all this life. It's just like my life has changed now. My priorities have adjusted. Mm-hmm. Because I'm thinking about how this family is going to grow. And I'm thinking about what my daughter's going to do. So things just change, things evolve, and you definitely grow. You grow a kind of selfless poise that you didn't have before, and things start sort of arcing towards that, you know, arcing towards the greater story, which is cool. And I think people can sense that. There's a new sense of urgency as well. Like on the sense you had that year, you got a lot of time to make things work. So it starts to not be the case, you know. But it's good because, you know, I think as the old adage goes, without a vision, the people perish, you know. And I tell you what, being a parent gives you a lot of vision, a lot of vision, you know what I'm saying?
I love it. It's so dope. Man, it's so good to hear from your perspective, you know, a father's perspective. It's beautiful, man.
I tell you what, my wife holds it down quite a lot. That's her here. She props to her for that. Yeah.
Amazing, amazing wifey. We're going to talk about your burgers, bro. Your burger. What is the secret, man?
Oh, man, I tell you what, the secret is just doing it over and over again. I tell you what, like, it's the same with anything, and this is not to deep it too much, but literally just do the same thing over and over again and you're going to be good at it. You know what I'm saying? You can be making burgers. It can be making music. It can be like whatever, you know, public speaking. Just do the same. Show up and do the same thing. So the reason why I started making burgers is because, you know, back in 2020, we had the long level 4 lockdown. We couldn't even sort of go to McDonald's or anything like that. And I'm like, well, I want takeaways. Can't get takeaways. I'll make my own takeaways, right? So I started trying to make these epic burgers, and I tell you what, they were trash. Like, they tasted okay, but they looked trash. I thought they looked awesome though. I was like, yo, check these out. And my wife was like, yeah, she was gassing me up. They were trash. But every Friday I kept making them. I kept taking photos, and I wasn't uploading them at the time. I was just taking photos just because I was like, yeah, check these photos out. Right. But they started to get to the point where me and my wife were like, hey, wow, these actually look pretty good. You think I should start posting them up? And I started posting them up. And people started liking it. Every Friday, I just kept making it and kept making it. I sort of adjusted things as I went. Like, I'm like, okay, well, how do I make it more look like this burger that I keep seeing on TV advertised by? How do I do this? Oh, actually, it's not just about how I'm making the burger. It's actually about how I'm taking the photo. What angle should I use? What lighting should I use? Oh, actually, maybe I should get a new camera because I'm going to do content for my stuff anyway, my Mansberg Q stuff. I might as well use this camera to take more epic photos of my burgers. Right. How do I use this camera? You know, so like along the way, as I just kept showing up every week and doing this, I made all these micro adjustments, what I did, and then got to the point where it's like, hey, every burger that I'm posting just looks epic and people's minds are blown. But again, it's not a conscious thing for me. I'm just doing it. You know, I'm just doing it all the time. And it actually made me think of this thing that I literally just heard earlier this morning. I think it was on TikTok. There was an experiment that a uni professor did with his creative class where over the summer break, he said, this group of students, you're only going to focus on quality and you're going to be judged on the quality of your photos. Whereas this group, you're going to focus on quantity and you're going to be judged on the quantity of your photos. And now intuitively, you would think that at the end of the summer, the people who paid more attention to their quality would have come up with higher quality photos. You'd think that because if you pay attention to quality, you get quality. That's not what happened. What happened was the people who paid attention to quality were too focused on trying to get the right photo, too focused on trying to get the right environment, the right lighting, and blah, blah, blah. Whereas the people who just kept doing it, the people who took 1,000 photos, just got better and better and better and better and better. And then at the end of the summer, the people who had the quantity, sure, all the photos at the start of the summer were trash, but the photos at the end of the summer were so much better than these people who only took 10 photos all summer. These guys took 1,000, right? The last 100 smoked them. And the whole lesson there is you just show up and do stuff. You put in your 10,000 hours and you're going to come up with something good. And that's literally what I have with my burgers. Like I started in 2020. I basically made a burger every week for 2 years. You know, there were some gaps where like, you know, a couple months where I'm like, I'm not going to make it this week or whatever, feeling a bit fat, probably not this time. But, you know, for the most part, I just made them all the time. And then they got that good. And now people are like, oh, you know, I don't want to give you my burger because your burgers are so epic. I'm like, bro, like, I'm not like that. I'm not like a burger elitist. I literally just make burgers and I take photos. I'm just quite good at it now because I've been doing it for so long, yeah. You know? Yeah.
That's dope. So where can people find them, man?
Yeah, I mean, you know, people have been hassling me about it. at the moment, you kind of got to be invited to the whare to try them. I'm not selling them because, like, I've got a few friends in catering and they're like, do not enter this business unless you are passionate about it because it is just stress and hard work. And I'm like, I've got enough of that. You know, I've got another day in my life. I'm not going to, you know, it's pretty much if we've been kicking it for some reason or another, you end up at my house and you might on the right day, then you might get a burger. You know, a couple of people are lucky enough to experience it. But
I might have to do an exchange of a coconut bread for a burger one day with you and wife.
Oh, yeah, maybe we could do that.
Dope. I love it. Love it. Yeah. I want to talk about The Rock, man. You know, the breakdown of that song with, Tech Nine. Come on, man. Like, I love that. I love that you broke it down. Like, did you even get through to him? Like, did he ever hear your version?
I'm not sure. And to be honest, that wasn't even the goal. Like, literally, I was just coming up with content. So the whole TikTok thing, it blew up because I was doing this analysis of rap and hip hop in context of music theory, more specifically rhythm theory. And that was something novel to people. And I started off by sort of taking sort of fundamental rhythm theory concepts and showing how they can influence rap and how, you know, they demonstrated in rap. And once I'd created a collection of videos which got through the fundamentals, I decided to start looking at rap, very popular rap. So I started off with a Drake song, and then I went to The Rock, and then I did Eminem. And honestly, I just chose those examples because they were hugely popular. Like The Rock in a rap song, everyone's going to listen to that, whether you're in hip hop or not. You know what I'm saying? And I thought this is a good time for me to sort of demonstrate some of these concepts that I introduced in early videos. And that's all it was. Like, it wasn't like an attack on him. In fact, in that video, I said he did a good job. This is just how I reckon it could have been better. And it was literally just to demonstrate, yo, these are the ways that, you know, rhythm theory can help you with your flow. These are the ways that perhaps they could have improved it in this case. And I didn't expect it to get as big as it did, but yeah, it really blew. I think it's at like 1 million views now. A lot of people like, nah, I'm not about it. But a lot of people like, more people like, yeah, no, this is, yeah, you know, this guy knows what he's talking about. So that's all it was, really. Just getting people used to the idea that you can actually apply analytical concepts to rap. Because it's a genre that I think historically a lot of people haven't thought of as being analytical or being technical in that respect. Like, everyone knows it's not easy to be a fast rapper or a skilled rapper, but people aren't aware of the depth of like conceptual load that can be, you know, applied to hip hop. So I guess what I'm doing is illuminating some of that.
I feel like even when I was listening to it, I was like, oh, I started to question myself as well. Like, oh, better not let him listen to my thing. He might go, oh, no, it should be like this. I'm not saying it's a gatekeeping kind of thing, but it's more of like anyone can rap now. But then, you know, it's like having someone like you come and go, hey, you know, put a little bit of effort into your craft. Don't just be a rapper, but actually look at your flow. Look at the way your bars are showing up, because people can spot, like real musos can spot it out. Like,
that's the thing. Like, one thing that's really bugged me about people's view of rap is that it seems like it's rap is the low-hanging fruit of music in people's mind. Like, you look at brands that want to do some kind of funny as promotion, they'll get someone who tries to rap. You know, like, you never do that with singing. You know, because you know that if you're a bad singer, you shouldn't be singing. But people think that you can, you know, you can just talk in time and you're a rapper. The classic example is Ben Shapiro, who's on record saying that rap is not music because it needs harmony or melody or some nonsense. You know, so the work that I'm doing is to show that actually now there are levels to this. There are levels, and you might think that you can just step in the door and be a rapper, but no, you can't. We know if you're legit or not. And what I'm doing is just literally teasing out the things that differentiate rappers from people who try to rap. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's being intuitively known for so long, but it hasn't really been described or, you know, written out or, you know, explained properly. And that's kind of what I'm doing. I'm like, okay, let me break down the things that actual rappers do that make them rappers. And then you'll start to see, oh crap, it's actually not easy. You know, are you telling me that Eminem did all of this in just a little bit? Yeah, he did. People come to my comment section being like, did he think about this? I'm like, at some level, yeah, he did. He might not have really conceptualized it in the precise way that I did, but at some intuitive level, yes, all these things were there. And you're mad that you're not there. You're mad that you're so far from being there that you can't even conceive of it. So you're accusing me of making all this up. That's not true. It's just the fact that they're a level, just like any genre of music. You can't walk into a jazz club and start playing jazz music just by hearing a jazz song on the radio. Like, how dare you think that you can do that? You know, so why do you think you can do that with hip hop? You know what I'm saying? Like, it's no lesser like distinguished and intricate art form than any other thing. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, that's the cop-up, I think.
Yeah. I just wanted to say thank you for doing that, and not in a way of like putting anybody down, but I feel like we need to raise awareness around it, because there's more to it than just making money from this thing. There's more to just signing a contract to make a number one hit. I love what you're doing. Keep doing what you do. Keep disrupting the system, because we need it. What's next for you? Any shows coming up?
So yeah, I've got a single and music video probably coming out later next month. More into brand music with my business. I've got a couple of very exciting brands I'm working with. And then also, I guess with the whole TikTok thing, I'm going live and like officially on TikTok to do some stuff for Aotearoa Music Month, which is pretty cool. Some analysis of some New Zealand rap stuff. So yeah, like I guess there are a few avenues that I'm just chasing. The live performances thing will probably come back sort of at the end of the year. Yeah.
Amazing. That's so good, bro. Thank you so much. This has been such an empowering, liberating Talanoa. It's such an honor to have you on this. Share, you know, your journey and share your knowledge. The best form of therapy is talking. Yeah, that's why I call it Le Talanoa, which is in Samoan, the conversation. Man, I can't wait. I'll keep a lookout for your TikTok when it drops, man.
Okay, see you later. Yeah, no dramas. We don't need a beef with no toddlers. We say moving like bro scholars. Everything top 10, no garbage. Yeah, no talkers. Just execute and don't promise. If you ain't with it now, then don't call us. We gonna be dealing with go problems. Go problems. Go problems. Yeah, go problems. We gonna be dealing with go problems. Go problems. Go problems. If you ain't with it now, then don't call us. We gonna be dealing with go problems. For starters, we lead, we're largest. The knowledge received, imparted. We're farmers, we seed, we harvest, we breathe, we're
targets. We grieve, our martyrs. Better put pause on your plans. Yeah, I'm that confident. 120 keys on the body, about 100 locks on the head. I started out for love, now I'm doing this for bread. And I put on for my city, Lagos, AK Birkenhead. I'm that one in every 100 years, and I'm only bound a third the way. My legacy would take the reins if my spirit left the earth today. I put hours in, I worked away. Homie, I climbed the ranks, I earned my way. So many times I've been turned away, but it's all come to what you've heard today. So I'm clean, I'm Karma, Louis, and Prada. I sheen, I'm Stardust, decreed, and chartered. Don't bother, just tweets, no parlor. Experience, no karma, that's period, no karma. Yeah. No dramas, we don't need a beef with no toddlers. We say moving like rose scholars, everything top tier, no garbage. Yeah. No talkers, just execute and don't promise. If you ain't with it now, then don't call us. We gon' be dealing with go problems. Go problems, go problems, yeah. Go problems, we gon' be dealing with go problems. Go problems, with it now, then don't call us. We gon' be dealing with your problems.
I wrote this rap on a central side. It was me and a homie, Maz. You know me and the Brody style. By now, on a beat, I can only spaz. I love this music, but I won't leave my crib till you show me cash. I came a long way from that hallway on my mom. I ain't going back. Why reason don't come round no more? I don't really see the sun round no more. Just a couple more years in the game. We gon' have it all shut down for sure. I'm still up in my hoodie, what's up? But I got a little pride up for mom. All the people that doubted me then. All the mother more.
Perfect.
It's done, done. Ay, pro club tee, black jeans on, I don't know these imposters. To my boys up the corners, dealing with go-level problems. So no offers, or send them now if you want us. Cause we ain't taking no offers, once we sitting down in that office. No deals, just partners, I'm clean, regardless. We scheme, we harvest, don't need no sponsors. My team, the sharpest, my dreams, my conscience. Louis and Prada, I sheen, I'm Stardust. Ay.
No dramas, we don't need a beef with no toddlers. We say moving like rose scholars, everything top tier, no garbage. Yeah. No talkers, just execute and don't promise. If you ain't with it now, then don't call us. We gon' be dealing with go problems. Go problems, go problems, yeah. Go problems, we gon' be dealing with go problems. Go problems, go problems. If you ain't with it now, then don't call us. We gon' be dealing with go problems.